Kaito, welcome to the panel on RNZ National, Janet Wilson and Sam Johnson on this afternoon. First up, Black Ferns hooker Te Kura Ngāte Arangamata says she's had a mental breakdown on tour, and disparaging comments from coaching staff led to anxiety and hyperventilation. In a post on social media last night, she outlined comments made by Black Ferns coaches that contributed to the decline of her mental health, included being told by a coach that he was embarrassed for her and could not tell her worth, and being told that she was picked only to play guitar. The veteran player said her confidence and self-esteem was so low that it made her play like she was walking on eggshells. And speaking to media earlier today, New Zealand Rugby's head of professional rugby, Chris Lindrum, says the allegations were incredibly distressing to read, and the organisation has offered its support and takes issues like this incredibly seriously. He says a review into the Black Ferns is underway and will include an investigation into Ngāte Arangamata's allegations. So to discuss this, is senior sports reporter for Stuff, Zoe George. Kia ora, Zoe.
Kia ora, Wallace. Always lovely to be on the panel with you.
Nice to have you on. And just reading this and her post, I think it was on Instagram, wasn't it? Very distressing stuff here. For example, I had forgotten about the five-year-old girl who started playing rugby with her cousins 25 years ago. I let the words over the years get to me, and those words became flesh. When you saw this, what did you make of it?
Yeah, well, she is one of now several female athletes to have spoken up this year about challenges with mental health and well-being. Earlier in the year, we saw Silver Ferns and Central Poles player Amelia Ekenazio step back. Tekuda's teammate Chelsea Alley spoke up back in May, I think it was. Then we had Naomi Osaka with the tennis and Simone Biles at the Olympic Games. And then we can't forget Olympic cyclist Olivia Podmore, who died in August. I think it also speaks to a wider issue in regards to athlete welfare and what that means and looks like. And we've had several issues with welfare in so many sports over the last 18 months, both at elite level and community. We've seen it in the likes of gymnastics, elite level canoe racing, bowls, and now cycling as well. So I really hope that by her sharing her story, that it will get people talking about mental health and well-being in sport and athlete welfare. I know it's something that we've spoken a lot about, Wallace.
Yes, we have, and I've just seen the New Zealand Herald here. New Zealand Rugby is to investigate serious allegations against the Black Ferns coach, and we asked New Zealand Rugby for comment here on the panel. But no doubt that this is going to be putting some pressure on New Zealand Rugby.
Well, I think that any time we have any form of athlete welfare issues in any sport, that should be a time for every sport to look at what they're doing, how they're doing it, and how they're engaging with their participants. And what she talked about being, you know, that five-year-old girl who started playing rugby with her cousins 25 years ago, that will resonate with so many of us. Because when we start back then, sport was fun. And that's what sport should be. It doesn't matter what level it's at, it should be fun. And it's about how do we build a culture, regardless of the sport, where we take a holistic approach to athlete health and well-being so that they're a human first, you know, and these athletes aren't superhuman, they're like everyone else. And how do we look after them to ensure that they're good? Because if they're good, then the results on the field will be good. And we know that the Black Ferns have been struggling. They lost four games in a row on that tour. So, I'm really pleased to hear that New Zealand Rugby are taking it seriously and are looking at reviewing this. So that's a really positive step. That's what we've seen with so many other sports as well. Gymnastics did a review. Cycling's got their independent inquiry going on at the moment, and I imagine athlete welfare will be part of that. That's a really pleasing step to hear.
All right, let's bring our panellist, Janet Wilson. Your thoughts, your questions, your comments.
Zoe, I'm very keen. This is what a lot of sporting organisations have said. You've outlined pretty well exactly the extent of this kind of bullying in other sports. But what action would you expect the rugby union to take in these circumstances? Because it sounds to me like it's reasonably profound bullying.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we saw with, you know, looking at other sports and what they've done or doing, so gymnastics had an independent review panel, cycling are doing the same. You want to get people who are completely independent from that sport, and if possible from sport, to go in and look at it with fresh eyes. That's probably the best way to go about it, and that's where you're going to get the best kind of results as well. You want to create an environment where people feel like that they can speak up as well. So in so many of these sports that we're seeing and that I've been reporting on in welfare issues, one of the key issues is that athletes in particular are scared of the repercussions if they do speak up about welfare issues. And that could include being dropped from a team or being deselected. And for some athletes, that means losing their income or their livelihood. So it's about creating that environment with an independent lens that has a culture of feedback and constructive feedback.
And by the way, I should have mentioned allegedly being told by a coach that he was embarrassed for her and could not tell her worth. Sam Johnson.
Do you think it speaks to a sort of problem in the sophistication of coaching in New Zealand that actually coaches are not quite channeling or figuring out how to motivate different people with different steps? Because it's appalling to read this, but actually people are motivated by all types of different things, and it's obviously the coach has been trying to get the player to perform highly through a really kind of inappropriate way. So is it, how much of it goes back onto the coach's training, do you think?
Yeah, that's a really great question as well. And not talking just rugby specific here, but all sport. One of the things that we see is a lack of women in decision-making positions and in elite coaching positions or in any coaching positions. And what we've found in so many sports is that programs that have been designed for men have just been picked up and transplanted into women's sports settings. And it doesn't necessarily work. Men and women, you know, women are not little men. So I think that's something that we need to think about when we put this kind of context. One of the other things as well, though, is that all of those names that I listed before are all women. And one of the things that women's sport does face is a huge underinvestment, including the Black Ferns. We have a Rugby World Cup coming up next year, and the Black Ferns have just lost 4 games on the trot. You know, there has been a huge lack of investment in women's rugby in New Zealand. Mm. It was the first thing to be cut when COVID hit. So, I mean, I completely understand how she's feeling about not being valued or feeling valued. I get that. And it's not just rugby, it's so many sports across the board where women are an afterthought.
Zoe, will the results of this be made public? Because you get the sense with some of these sports that what they're doing is, oh, you know, they go to the old, we're taking this terribly seriously, which means they're in the crap, basically. Mm-hmm. But are they going to actually show the action that actually solves the problem?
Well, I hope so. I hope so. Transparency is really important, because if we're not open about this, then we're not going to get change. I mean, with the gymnastics review, there was a lot of transparency, but it's taken a long time to put in place some of those recommendations. So I really hope that New Zealand Rugby, as our leader in sport in New Zealand, can lead positively in this way.
Zoe, so good to have you on, and I can't help thinking, as you did so well, you opened that lens wide at the start and you included other sports. You can't help thinking, as some people are texting through, what the heck is going on in New Zealand sport?
Yeah, it's
honestly
a challenge. It is a challenge. We are seeing positive changes, though, and for me at the moment, I am deep into the cycling stuff. We've just had 3 major resignations from Cycling New Zealand in the last 2 weeks. We've got the big independent inquiry coming out. I really hope something positive can come out of that. That came about after Olivia Podmore's suspected suicide. And we should not have athletes killing themselves because of sport or because they're involved with sport. That's just not okay. And so I just really think that we can get some positive traction here, that New Zealand Rugby can lead positively, that Cycling New Zealand, the review, I'm very interested to see what comes out of that. But I think we need to get back to the notion of why we play and participate and engage in sport. And it's part of who we are as New Zealanders. And it should be fun. Sport should be fun, regardless at whatever level.
Yeah. Did you want a final thought there, Sam?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, really, the first thought, it's that old saying that whatever, if you're a coach or a mentor or a teacher or whatever, or a boss, whatever the first thought that comes into your mind probably shouldn't be the one that comes out. And I think too often we actually just let your first thought come out rather than being a little more reflective on how do you motivate the person you're talking with or trying to improve their performance.
Zoe, George, kia ora for your time and thanks for being with us on the panel.
Thank you.
It is 18 past four. You are on the panel, RNZ National. We are with Sam Johnson and Janet Wilson this afternoon. Well, Auckland has recorded a net population decline for the first time ever over the year to June. 13,500 people who quit Auckland in the past year and moved to other parts of the country. Auckland's natural population increase, births minus deaths, helped offset losses from international and internal migration, but Stats NZ population still estimates a 1,300 population decrease. One reason? Due to housing affordability, Auckland house sales volumes have surged. Prices are up 18.5% annually. The average Auckland price for last month, $1.25 million. So if you were one of those 13,500 Aucklanders who did move, let's hear from you. Email me, thepanel@rnz.co.nz. With us is freelance journalist Nisha Bremner, who moved from Tamaki Makaurau around 2 years ago and is now based in Orfango, 15 minutes from Taumata Nui. Nisha, kia ora, welcome.
Wonderful to be here.
What, now, you chose a fairly small village, Nisha. Why settle on Orfango?
Well, I think Orfango chose me, if I was honest. It was the price of the property. The Auckland property market was ridiculously unaffordable, and as a single occupancy homeowner, servicing an Auckland mortgage just wasn't possible for me. And also, you know, access to the outdoors, the mountains 26 kilometres away. There is an urban hub at Taumata Nui. But it's definitely a change of life when you first move here, that's for sure.
Yes, so I did a bit of a homework. I went on to the property sites and had a look at what I can get in Orfango. I had to do a double take, Nisha, when I saw today, a four-bedroom place on 1,000 square metres, quite a nice place, $385,000.
Okay, but it's going to sell for more than that because rates, I previously worked in local government here. Properties are selling here. A two-bedroom house sold here 6 months ago for just under $500,000.
Ah, okay.
So asking prices and actual prices are very different, but who knows what will happen. Some research that I've been doing around the property market indicates that rents have increased here in the first quarter of this year, increased by 30%, and we're an incredibly low-wage economy. The average household income is $48,000 per annum, which is a really tiny amount. And can you imagine if your rent's increasing by a third every three or four months? I mean, how is that possible?
Well, let's go around the panel on this. And I think, Janet Wilson, you were, you moved a bit before a year ago, didn't you? But were you perhaps, would it be one of the 13,500 people to leave Auckland?
No, I wasn't. But mine was nearly 5 years ago.
Yeah.
5 years in this February. And I mean, it was clear cut because I was going to have a better, and it's probably be a bit like you, Nisha, a better lifestyle for less money and a greater lifestyle than what I had in Auckland. So it was a no-brainer, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was living in just inland from Silverdale, commuting to AUT to do postgraduate, and to get to an 8 o'clock class, I was living at 5:30 in the morning.
Wow.
Right. That's just not tenable.
That ain't living, is it?
No, it's not.
I'm wondering what's going to happen, though. Now we're going to have the borders will be opening, ostensibly. Whether those 13,500 in the last year, according to Statistics New Zealand, whether we're going to get a deluge of people in the regions.
Well, the interesting thing here is that I know that some local real estate agents are prepared for a bit of an onslaught. I mean, Ruapehu has had one of the highest growths in its real estate market in the last year. That's levelling out a little bit with the lockdowns in Auckland being behind the Great Wall of the Bombays. But, you know, I've been rung up by real estate agents saying, hey, we've got a buyer for your home. Do you want to buy it? And I'm like, well, no, where would I go? This is the last affordable place in New Zealand.
Yeah. Sam.
I was just sort of thinking, generally it's a good thing, isn't it, if people do feel safe and they've got the confidence to move from city to city around New Zealand. And so I'd be interested to know more about the barriers, Nisha, and you might know this or not, about why people don't move. So, you know, after the Auckland border opens up, I've lived my life in Christchurch. It's a great city, great people, access to jobs and nature, that sort of thing. But one of the things Christchurch is sort of accused of is, oh, maybe it's hard to make friends. And it's something a lot of us in Christchurch have worked really hard on for the last 10 years since the earthquake. So going, actually, how do we make this a really welcoming place? And I think no matter where you are in the country, we have to make it really welcoming when people come in and really not have that that great sort of Kiwi reputation of helping people make friends and networks, then so that you can easily, if you do have to move to Auckland for work, or you do move to Wellington or Christchurch, or you move to a more rural location, that actually you can fit in and have a good time there.
Yeah, I think if people know that you're moving to Ruapehu permanently and you show that in your intent by actually staying here and you invest in the community, you're part of the community very quickly. I mean, I knew I was accepted by the village fully, you know, 6 months ago when a neighbour came round and trimmed my tree without me asking, you know. And, you know, it was by a person who'd lived in the village for six generations. You know, I'm in now. But the other thing is that when you move to places like Ruapehu, you really need to adjust your expectations around access to services, particularly health. I mean, we have a regional hospital here, but we have 4 emergency beds, 2 doctors. We have 3 GPs for 9,000 people in Ruapehu. Waikato DHB has said that only oxygen may be given to people when COVID gets here, because it will, because we have the second lowest vaccination rates in the whole of New Zealand. 15.3% of our community who are eligible are choosing not to get vaccinated at this time. We have 2 ambulances to service those 4 emergency beds. It's a 3-hour trip to Waikato Hospital. So, I mean, if it gets endemic in here, when COVID gets here, it's going to be really, really tricky. And you have to think about, can I access my GP outside of the immediate area? Because, you know, you're 2.2 times more likely to go to ED if you live in Ruapehu to access healthcare than you are anywhere else on Waikato DHB, because we're a statistical variable. We're only 2% of the DHB's clientele.
How interesting. Someone says West Coast, South Island, hands down for affordability and quality of life. If you have moved from Auckland to somewhere else in Aotearoa, let me know. Text us 2101. Why did you do it? And what do you make of it? Just finally, Nisha, Auckland, the super city, great city. Do you miss it?
Yeah, do you know what I like? I like to be able to walk out my door and get whatever I want. Oh, I feel like going to the movies. Oh, the movie theatre is not open tonight. It's not open for 2 weeks. So, you know, and things like the film festival and the art gallery and all that culture stuff I really miss. But there's a really dedicated group of people here working on that. I mean, like, I'm working with a local radio station, Trunk FM, to develop a local news service so we can start holding these big systems to account to actually get great resources here so we can attract talent. And, you know, like, there's people really passionate, and more people moving down here will really help that.
Good on you. Thanks for joining us on the panel. Nisha Brenner, freelance journalist who moved from the city of Auckland around 2019 and is now based in Ōwhangua, around 15 minutes from Taumata Nui. The panel international is 26 minutes past 4. You with Wallace Chapin, Sam Johnson and Janet Wilson. Now, a grandmother has taken to Reddit to share her distress not being paid enough to babysit her grandson. Her daughter had asked her to babysit for 2 days, her grandson for 2 or 3 days a week, and the grandmother asked to be paid for her time. She asked for $12 an hour, then complained that her daughter made a lowball offer of $10 per hour. I'm not a daycare. I have my own life. I work for myself, and I think she should understand that I'd be giving up my time, she wrote. If I'm not to be giving up that time, then I need money to replace that time I'm giving up my job. So are you a grandparent, and do you charge for babysitting? Would you? 2101, text me, round the panel, Janet, what do you think? Is there an unfair expectation out there that grandparents are always there for free childcare?
Well, in this particular case, let's use this as an example. The big mistake this woman made was to go onto Reddit to argue her case in the first place. To be honest with you, because you're never going to get, you know, everyone's going to judge you, and they're never going to understand what the circumstances are. But this isn't a unique case. She was being asked to babysit for 3 days a week. That's, if she worked for herself, that's more than half her week taken out.
Yes.
So for her to ask for something was actually fair. Was $12 an hour fair when the daughter only actually earned $22 an hour? Maybe not. But maybe you could come to some arrangement that ensured that it was seen to be fair and she would have the benefit of having her son,
but
her grandson.
Some people are saying here, Janet, the mere thought of ever thinking about charging, this is the grandson. It's a grandson.
We don't know her financial circumstances. She may have to work and that may be important to her.
Mm.
So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of assumptions that are being made here.
Well, let's bring in Mr. Volunteer, Sam.
Well, I look at it from the lens of a value exchange. So there is, no matter what sense, whether the grandparent is volunteering, whether they are just supporting their family or whānau free of charge, like many do, there is a value exchange of some sort going on at all times. It is valuable to someone, and somebody's given up their time. So it's important not to put a dollar figure on all this stuff all the time, or end up paying for everything, right? And that simply doesn't work. So I think that this particular case is almost quite problematic, and I totally agree with Janet. The mistake was going on to Reddit and trying to argue the case. But we do need to probably look at what is the value that grandparents give to grandchildren all over the country and the world, and it's absolutely huge. And then make sure, well, if you are a parent with kiddies and you're asking your parents or someone to look after them, that there is that reciprocated value and it works well for them. And I think that the other point that I just wanted to make, though, that when it is a paid friendship, I do know some research that we did on, I used to run an older person's visiting service with students, and it was a paid relationship. And the good thing about paid relationships is it can incentivize the behavior to happen more regularly.
Right.
And what we found is that it didn't actually muddy the quality of the relationship. So there is a need sometimes that there is a payment, and that's okay too.
Oh my goodness me, I'll tell you what, someone says, I wouldn't dream of it. Another one, this is dreadful. I would never charge. It wouldn't do 3 days either. One is fine. This is a really gross attitude, that grandmother. Yes, I charge, Janet. Cuddles, kisses, hugs and smiles.
This is a story that's designed for clickbait. And we are falling down the rabbit hole of clickbait, Wallace.
Typical baby boomer. They got free childcare themselves or didn't even need to work as one income
was
enough.
Beat up the old lady.
No, it's not about beating
up. She's rich enough to look after herself. You know, there's just it's part of the disinformation network that we're talking about here, right? We don't know. She could be on the bones of a bum.
Mm. Fair enough.
Might be a very circumstances.
Yep. Yep. All right. Very interesting. A big response to that. Keep those coming. What do you think? Would you chat? Is there a case in which you can actually say to your daughter, to your son, look, hey, I'm happy to take the kids, but it needs to be $12 an hour.
I think the dollar figure is the mistake. That's the hard part.
Yeah, indeed. You're on the panel. Yeah.